Hey everybody, welcome to the final On the Rocks podcast of the 2018 season. I'm Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman alongside Patrick Saunders out here in beautiful Centennial at Doug's Day Diner. Just chowed down a little bit and now we're going to talk Rockies. Patrick, thanks for coming on the show for like the 50th time this season.
No problem, Kyle. It was quite the journey from my house down here to beautiful Centennial. I must say, excellent food here at Doug's Day Diner. And they are not an official sponsor of the show, but gotta tell you, that was tasty.
Yeah, we are paying for these meals, as Patrick said. Or maybe Patrick would be. We'll figure that out later. But for now, we're going to have some Rockies analysis, looking back on 2018, the season that was, and projecting ahead to 2019. So first off, we'll start off, Patrick. This Rockies team, 91 wins, made the NLDS, back-to-back postseason showings for the first time in franchise history. They came within a sniff of that first NL West title. Is this more or less than what you expected of this Colorado team in 2018?
I think I've got to be honest and say it's just about what I expected. I don't remember exactly when I first wrote it or said it, but I really thought the NL West was there for the taking for the Rockies. Bud Black had said it all the way back in spring training. The players believed it. And it came true. They tied for the division title, lost the tiebreaker game. So I think expectation-wise, they were just about right. I'm pretty sure my preseason projection was 89 victories. So I was pretty close. I think later in the year, I said that they would take 92 to win the division, which I think, if you count the game 163, was spot on. They met my expectations. Now, breaking it down a little bit, I will say this. The starting pitching exceeded my expectations. I did not truly expect Kyle Freeland to be this good. I thought Marquez had a chance to take a big step forward. Antonio Sensatella, about where I thought. Big disappointments in my book, certainly for the starting pitching, John Gray, Tyler Anderson. But the expectations were about where I thought it would be. But I got to say, the offense did not produce as I thought they would.
And reflected in the lowest batting average in franchise history this season. And then obviously we saw that in the NLDS and even in the wild card game when they just mustered two runs across against the Cubs across 13 innings to win that game. And then they went on to Milwaukee, went to extra innings that first game, second game got shut out, and obviously we know what happened on that dismal Sunday, this past Sunday at Coors Field, as it got shut out again and got swept. I would pretty much agree with you, Patrick. I mean, before the season, talking optimistically, I would say NLCS would be a pretty high watermark. And, you know, they fell three games short of that and pretty far short of that considering how bad they got beat by the Brewers. But to get to the NLDS, to get back to the postseason for the second straight time. Now, if they had lost in that wild card game, I think my response maybe would have been a little different. I think it would have been a little less than what I expected of them. And as you said, just compartmentally, starting pitching overall exceeded expectations despite John Gray, the opening day starter, faltering and the offense not coming around. Although some guys did surprise, and we'll get to that here in a second.
The one thing I will say about it, it didn't show up in the division series against the Brewers, but I thought winning at Wrigley in the wild card game, in the fashion they did in extra innings and holding on in that environment and winning was a big step for this franchise. That's a tough place to win against a pretty storied team. The Rockies hung in there and won. I thought that win would spur them on. I thought they were going to beat the Brewers. Looking back on it now, one, we didn't know the offense was going to go in the hole like it did. And I don't think the Rockies can use this as maybe a legitimate excuse, Kyle, but I do think it was a really tired ball club. And that doesn't excuse how poorly they performed offensively. But the travel was brutal toward the end there. And the fact that every game was kind of this must-win game, I think that's part of the reason, looking back on it, why they did not perform to expectations against the Brewers. Now, that's not an excuse. To get to the next level, you've got to be able to deal with that. But I do think it made a difference. And I'm not equating what we did with what the Rockies did, but I know and I'm serious about this, I know how tired everybody who covers the team was with the craziness of city after city and crazy flights. Now, I realize the Rockies have their own jet and all of that, but I got to think they would never say it publicly. I got to think they were a tired team. I really do.
I think I agree with you. I mean, I saw that kind of in their eyes, you know, in the clubhouse throughout the divisional series. And that was even coming off the wild card game where being in that, you know, champagne-soaked visitors clubhouse at Wrigley, I got the sense like, well, this could be another Rocktober 2007 run with kind of the momentum, a gritty, gritty win, outlasting, you know, the friendly confines and withstanding a crowd that really brought it that night. But yeah, they ran out of gas, I think, definitely in that Brewers series and against a very red-hot Brewers team, though. Let's give them credit as well. Again, folks, this is the On the Rocks podcast. Kyle Newman along Patrick Saunders here, just summing up the 2018 season and looking ahead to 2019 on the final installment of the show. We touched a little bit on it in the first segment. Let's get right to it in the second segment, Patrick. Biggest disappointment this year, and these are some elephants in the room, not only for this year, but going into 2019 with some of these contracts. Is it John Gray? Is it Brian Shaw? Is it Jake McGee? Is it Ian Desmond? I feel like it's got to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I think so. We already mentioned the offense as a whole, which is why, and we'll talk about this more later in the podcast, why I think they need to add some power bats to this lineup in the offseason. But if you're looking at specific individuals, Kyle, boy, there's a lot out there. I would have to say the biggest disappointment by far in my book is Brian Shaw, if you're talking about individuals, because, you know, Scott Oberg ended up kind of becoming Brian Shaw. But considering his resume, the money they spent on him, 3 years, $27 million, the role that was projected for him, the fact that he didn't even sniff the postseason roster, basically, Bud Black did not trust him in anything other than a mop-up role late. It's got to qualify as one of the biggest busts of any of the offseason signings, not just the Rockies, but across baseball, because he came with a reputation as one of the best late-inning relievers around, and he was flat-out terrible. I mean, there was a reason why people cringed whenever he came into the game. So the other players you mentioned, Desmond, Jake McGee, John Gray to a certain extent. But to me, the most disappointing player by far for the Rockies was right-hand reliever Brian Shaw.
In John Gray's case, you can say other guys made up for it. In Ian Desmond's case, it's hard to, you know, put all the offensive woes on one specific guy, even though in wins above average, Colorado ranks second to last in the major leagues at the first base position, if that tells you anything. But really, when you look at that bullpen, I mean, you mentioned Oberg stepping up, but for a while there, Shaw and McGee were threatening to sink the season just about all by themselves. And thank goodness, I think, like you said, Bud Black got to a point in, you know, August-ish, early August-ish, where Brian Shaw was not getting the ball, and he was getting the ball mop-up duty. And, you know, by early September, it was clear he was not going to be on the postseason roster. And that was to Colorado's advantage, as other guys, O and Oberg, namely, had stepped up.
Yeah, I agree with that. You mentioned Desmond. And, you know, Ian Desmond has become the player a lot of fans love to hate. And I get that because he signed a big 5-year, $70 million contract. He's making $22 million this year against the payroll, who made him the highest paid Rockies player. But I will say this for Desmond, and I've tweeted this a couple times, and of course the Twitter sphere went crazy, but his numbers were not great, but he did add some value to this team. You know, he almost hit 90 RBIs, his home runs were pretty good, and he had a lot of big hits through the course of the season. I think the people's beef with Ian Desmond is, I don't care what Bud Black says or Jeff Bright or other people, I don't think he's a very slick first baseman. I think he has some flaws there. He did ground out way too much. He ground out more than any player in the National League, grounded into more double plays than any Rockies player. Having said that, I think his athleticism on the base paths and the fact that he did come up with some big hits, you've got to give him some props for that, even though he's certainly way down on the list of favorite players for Rockies fans. There's no question.
Yeah, Desmond, negative 0.6 war, not exactly ideal for a guy making buku bucks like that. But as you mentioned, the power numbers, pretty decent, 22 home runs, 88 RBIs, contrasting that .236 batting average and bevy of groundouts in the clutch, it seemed, lots of those coming for him.
And one more thing I want to say about Desmond. A little perplexed when they signed him originally. But the thing about the Rockies, if you go back in their history, Andres Galarraga, Todd Helton, Justin Morneau, those are guys who were plus, offensively plus first baseman. And in a ballpark like Coors Field, I think you need a big bat at first base. I just think you can't have it be a .236 player. And I think that's one of the reasons Desmond has come up as a big disappointment, because I think Rockies fans are expecting something more out of their first baseman.
Again, folks, that was Patrick Saunders. This is Kyle Newman on the Rocks podcast, packed show for you here today, and the final installment of the podcast for 2018. So let's not go down the train to negative town, as Bud Black likes to say in his pregame pressers. Let's talk about the biggest surprises here this season. For me, I've got to say it's Scott Oberg. I think you might agree. And then offensively, I really like David Dahl, even though he did scuffle down the stretch in the playoffs there. What do you think, Patrick?
I agree with your assessment on Oberg, Kyle, because remember, he got sent down earlier in the year to AAA, and he had a back injury, put him on the DL, and then he had his first child, and he was kind of in no man's land for a while. And, you know, going all the way back to Walt Weiss, the Rockies were constantly talking about this guy's stuff. You know, he has plus stuff, and he can get it done once he learns to command all of his pitches. And if you look at it through the second half of the season, maybe even from June on, he was the most consistent reliever the Rockies had. He was unbelievable. So I think that was a really nice, as you mentioned, surprise. I'll tell you another guy that I don't think got enough credit and kind of surprised me a little bit was Gerardo Parra, because Gerardo was given a very difficult role. He was not an everyday starter. He was a part-time starter. He was their best pinch hitter off the bench. He played excellent defense. He came up with a number of big hits. We knew he was never going to hit for power, but he became kind of the super utility player that they needed. And I thought Parra, and I really think a lot of people, not just us, we didn't pay him a lot of attention, because, you know, he would kind of be in the moment, then he'd be gone, and then in the moment, then he'd be gone. But I was surprised. I didn't think Parra would be as big a contributor this year as he was. So hats off to him. I thought he excelled in a really difficult role.
Summer of Parra, as they say, yeah, on the Twitter sphere. And hey, I think we did pay him some mind. If we go back in the archives, there's quite a few Gerardo Parra spark plug stories that you and I have written on DenverPost.com this year. So check that out, of course, folks. And we're on the Rocks podcast right now. Kyle Newman alongside Patrick Saunders at Doug's Day Diner. Just some lovely ladies laughing, sharing stories next to us. We just ate some eggs and biscuit covered in gravy, feeling very healthy here on the podcast. So we're talking the biggest surprise, and I just want to throw in one more note about Scott Oberg there. The reason I love this guy even more is he's just such an average, normal guy. And, you see him in person, you talk to him, I feel like it could be me out there if I had the stuff, you know? And just throw in the having the kid midseason and just dealing with everything he's gone through, it's really good to see him kind of excelling. Hopefully he can continue to take that into 2019 for the Rockies.
I got to ask you this. We didn't mention Kyle Freeland's surprise, but honestly, when the season began, did you think Kyle Freeland would essentially have one of the greatest possibly the greatest season in Rockies history from a starting pitcher, rivaling the 2010 season from Ubaldo Jimenez. I mean, the things Kyle Freeland did were remarkable. I thought he'd be good. I didn't think he'd be great. He turned out to be great.
Turned out to be great, and great with not Randy Johnson overpowering southpaw stuff. As he liked to say, pitching to weak contact. He did so, so effectively all season. And even in his last home start, that clinched the postseason berth that Friday, gave up a career-high 11 hits. Had bases loaded a couple times, like snuck out of some things, but that's what he did all season. And I think, I mean, his grit more than anything, that's what I love about it, especially being a hometown guy, too. And he talks it and he walks it, you know, on the field and off the field. We've talked about it, too, with his work with the DPS, too. So, yes, hats off to Kyle Freeland. Big surprise there just with how much he dominated, especially at Coors Field. 2.40 ERA, that was a record this season. Again, this is the On the Rocks podcast, about halfway through. Let's look ahead a little bit to next season. Greatest need in 2019, Patrick. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do here, but also there's so much at play with contracts, with Nolan, with the 100 mil already doled out to the bullpen last year. Any immediate simplified thoughts on how to make this team better going into next year?
Well, I think the fact that you're losing DJ LeMahieu, not that he was a power hitter, but you're losing DJ LeMahieu, likely to lose Cargo, likely to lose Gerardo Parra, likely to lose Adam Ottavino, but I think this offense needs an infusion. I think it needs a big bat to make it a more dangerous lineup. As you mentioned early, lowest team batting average in franchise history. That's 26 years worth. You know, typically, we see the Rockies leading the league. I don't have the exact number ahead of me. I think it ended up being about 254 for the season, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there. That was a huge disappointment. So my number one need, I think, for this team is they need to add some pop, because I know everybody's excited about the young prospects, and, you know, be it Ryan McMahon or Brendan Rodgers or Garrett Hampson, but you can't expect any of those guys, or David Dahl, in my mind, to suddenly become somebody to pair with Story and Nolan Arenado. So I think they need a big bat going forward. I also think the Rockies should probably look into a catcher. And I know Tony Walters did okay, and Chris Iannetta did okay. But the Rockies, in my mind, catching is still not a real strength of this team. And catchers are tough to find. So who knows, they may go all into 2019 with the same duo. But it would not surprise me to see them try to bring in a veteran catcher at some point.
So, Patrick, I just addressed this on DenverPost.com/Rockies on the Rockies Insider. You mentioned the catching not being a strength, and it definitely wasn't. Those four guys, Iannetta, Walters, Tom Murphy, and Drew Butera, posted team positional lows in every major offensive category, hitting 206 and 544 at-bats. And between the two main guys, Walters and Iannetta, I mean, it's just such an inconsistent effort. I mean, they had flashes, but Walters hit 170 in 56 starts, worst average among all Rockies regulars. So, yeah, I think maybe you need to take a look there. And then maybe go get that bat. But really, it's what is Jeff Breidich willing to part with? We saw at the trade deadline, and Bud Black acknowledged us after the season, there were many talks for many of the big names, but it seems like the Rockies really value some of these young prospects, a la Brendan Rodgers. And although, even as Bud Black acknowledges, the curve from AAA to the big leagues, there's a reason there's that curve. It might seem like the Rockies might be relying on some of these guys to potentially step in if they don't go and make a big move like that.
I think we saw, Kyle, this year, and I think this was as much Bud Black or more Bud Black than Jeff Breidich. Bud Black trusts veterans a lot more than he trusts rookies and up-and-comers, sometimes maybe to a fault. I think Bud Black sometimes erred a little bit too much on giving playing time to the veterans. I understand why, but if the Rockies don't make major moves, he's saying Bud Black is going to have no choice but to go with a very young lineup. And that has its pluses and its minuses. But if they do that, you're going to have to get more production out of Ian Desmond at first base. Trevor Story, I think, has established himself as a true power shortstop, and then there, you have Nolan. But I just think they're going to need some more pop. You know, we haven't even mentioned Charlie Blackmon, and you know he didn't have the series for the ages like he did a year ago, but he was still pretty damn good. And David Dahl, we'll see where it goes. He certainly has the potential. But I think if the Rockies just rely on that core group that I just mentioned, I don't think they're going to take the step forward they need to compete with the Dodgers for an NL West title, to compete with some of these teams that are going to retool. The window remains open for this team. In my mind, once in a while, you've got to start making some bold moves. In this offseason, I think it's going to be important for Rockies to at least investigate a bold move or two if they want to keep playing with the big boys. I applaud them for the development of their pitching rotation. I applaud them for a lot of their homegrown talent. I think they've done a very good job. I think that's the way to go. But I also think they've got to be a little courageous and make a move that might bring them over the top. It remains to be seen. And they've got a lot of decisions coming up. You know, you and I have been talking about it for a while. I've written about it recently. What happens with Nolan Arenado? He's under contract. He says he thinks he'll be here in spring training. I think he will be too. But who knows what's going to happen? You know, they traded Matt Holliday 10 years ago in the offseason when they couldn't come to a long-term deal with him. So there's a lot on Jeff Bryich's plate right now, and I'm sure he knows it too.
Yeah, so much in the air, providing plenty of angst for Rockies Twitter, even amid a pretty successful season, back-to-back seasons by Rockies franchise standards. So it seems to me, Patrick, we have such a conundrum here, because, like, as you mentioned, so much up in the air. What's Arenado going to do? Is DJ really going to walk? Are we going to rely on all these young guys next year? Are we going to make a move? But then there's so much pretty cemented positive things about this team too, starting with that rotation, which, as we saw this year, through the 256 team average, looked it up there, folks, you're just 2 points off, 256, lowest in franchise history, and through all the ups and downs, yes, they played well on the road, through the early home struggles, that rotation kept them in it, and that rotation is basically all coming back next season, highlighted by Kyle Freeland and Germán Márquez, who, I mean, down August, September, were two of the best pitchers in the entire National League. Like, lots of things to look forward to there if you're Rockies fans.
Well, I agree, and it sounds like we're maybe being too negative. We're not. I mean, I applaud what the Rockies did. They've never done this before. I think they left a bitter taste a little bit how they lost in the NLDS to the Brewers, a very hot team, who, by the way, I'm rooting for to beat the Dodgers.
As am I.
Yeah, but you're right. The rotation is as good a place as it's ever been. Sensatella needs to find a more effective second and third pitch to join Freeland and Márquez at the top of the rotation. John Gray remains a conundrum, an enigma wrapped around a riddle or whatever that cliche is. I don't know what's going on with John. I'm sure part of it is physical. I'm sure a lot of it is mental and the pressure. He's got to figure that out.
Oh, and as you mentioned in your story, pitching underweight most of the season. But, I mean, if it wasn't one thing, it was another, it seemed, at times this season with him. So you're right. What do they do with John Gray is a huge question.
And then you've got to wonder if Jeff Hoffman. Where is Jeff Hoffman, right? I mean, he didn't even join he wasn't called up for the September call-ups, you know? So you got to wonder, I mean, is he ever going to blossom like they expect him to? Tyler Anderson did bounce back. Can he be counted on? So they were so fortunate this year that everybody stayed healthy, and knock on this wood table, they will stay healthy again. But they do need some more depth, and it's got to be more than Márquez and Kyle Freeland next year. They really do.
And folks, Kyle Newman and Patrick Saunders on the On the Rocks podcast, and just about done with the show, but we'll close here. You got something for me,
yes,
Patrick?
I guess we're fans here. Where are we again?
Doug's Day Diner.
Doug's Day Diner in beautiful Centennial, Colorado. a phantom fan, or random fan rather, just wrote down, great show. Thanks. Looking forward to next year. Go Rockies. So whoever you were out there, thanks for the compliment. I thought he was going to pay for our bill, but he didn't. But that's okay. We'll take the compliment. And just, I do want to say one thing, Colin. I'll let you sign us off. Great season overall. A lot of really great moments, no question.
What was your favorite? Let's close with that. What was your favorite?
Okay. It's got to be Wrigley Field, that 13-inning game at Wrigley. Kyle Freeland's performance. And, you know, we mentioned Tony Walters. We mentioned 170 batting average. But for Tony Walters, Tony Three Bags, to come up with the game-winning hit at Wrigley, and that Wrigley Field was about as loud as any ballpark I've ever been to. That place went stone dead silent. And to be in that clubhouse when the Rockies won that game, that was really cool. You know, I've been doing this job a long time, and you've been doing it much shorter time. We're different generations. And you know I tend to get a little bit jaded. Let's face it.
No. You're not a curmudgeon at all. I've never called you that.
Shush. But it kind of restored my faith in how much fun professional sports can be to see the Rockies win the way they won that night and see the spontaneous and real joy in that clubhouse. That was a great night. And I hope Rockies fans who are kind of on a negative roll right now, judging by the emails I'm getting and judging by Twitter, will remember that night and the fact that the Rockies did. It was a great ride for a long time. So I think it was a really good season.
I would say my favorite moment actually came on a night I was sitting on the couch with my son watching the game. But for future reference, I'll say I was at the game. True stories, three home run night, and seeing him hit one 505 feet off the concourse, hit a home run from his knee. I mean, that was pretty much as cool as a thing I've seen with the Rockies in terms of individuals. And of course, he had the coming out party a couple years ago. But that really, I think, cemented not only him into the MVP conversation from there on out, but like, hey, this guy could be like something real, real special. Not just like a real good shortstop, but something even better than Tulo. And that's a little sacrilegious to say in Rockies Nation.
Your son is Jackson. Jackson's how old?
He's 2.5. Loves the Rockies.
So what did Jackson think? Did he understand what Trevor Story had
done?
That's fantastic.
I played it back for him. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So that'll just about do it for today's show, folks. Appreciate you listening to the podcast this season. We will be back next season, of course, in spring training with more analysis, and follow along in the offseason at dimmerpost.com/Rockies. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Newman DP, and Patrick is at P Saunders DP. Appreciate you listening. Until next season, folks, take it easy.